20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packer fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm incredibly excited to be joined once again by Paul Bredel. You can find him on social media at Paul_Bredel. Of course, ESPN lacrosse covering the Packers as only he can, better than anyone else out there. And I always appreciate talking to him. We are going to be airing this a little bit later in the week. We are recording this on Monday at 9:30 a.m. Central Time. So this is going to likely air over the weekend. As I've mentioned on a couple other episodes, I'm going to be out of town. So just trying to get a couple of these done in advance. But Paul, despite us not knowing the future and what this week holds, we've got a lot to discuss from a Packers standpoint nonetheless. And I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to come on and chat today.
Hey, I'm always happy to be here talking Packers with you, Andy. Looking forward to it.
I appreciate that a ton. One of the main questions I've obviously been kind of asking this week and just kind of trying to gauge everyone's thoughts on is just the overarching thoughts on the offseason. So you obviously have three free agent additions in Aaron Banks and Nate Hobbs and Mecole Hardman. They bring back two players in Brandon McManus and Isaiah McDuffie, a variety of other players who have gone on to other destinations. I don't think anyone is really losing any sleep over, but your overall thoughts on the Packers offseason thus far?
Yeah, again, I think a lot of that stems from coming into this. What were your expectations? And obviously, I'm sure everyone's wondering, where's the big receiver signing? Where's the big defensive line signing? And I know we'll get into more of that here in a bit. But for me, my expectations were that we weren't going to see any splash additions at either of those positions. So expecting that coming into this, and specifically looking at the Banks addition and the Hobbs addition, at least from a starting perspective, and I think depth-wise on the offensive line, I think the Packers are in a better spot than where they were several weeks ago prior to free agency starting. You get the addition of Aaron Banks at left guard, and I think, one, it provides that unit with just more flexibility. You know, now Elgton Jenkins moves to center, and I think that gives you a little more flexibility with, all right, where do we want to play Jordan Morgan? Where is he at his best? Where can he create the most valuable competition? Is it at right guard with Sean Ryan? Is it at left tackle with Rashid Walker? I think the addition of Banks brings that opportunity to see if he can compete at left tackle more into play than what it was previously. In addition to that, I think the Packers' run game has an opportunity to really improve with Aaron Banks. That's been the strength of what he brings to the table as an offensive lineman. And we know the run game was impressive last year, right? Josh Jacobs had all those yards, all those touchdowns. The Packers leaned on that element heavily. But as I've written about, there's one area where they could really, really improve in the run game, and it's generating big runs. That's an area that they didn't do a lot of last season. We saw a lot of 4, 5, 6 yard gains from Josh Jacobs, but we didn't see those 15, 20, 25 yard runs. Pro Football Focus has their breakaway metric. How often, relative to the number of carries you have, are you breaking away for a gain of 15 or more yards? Josh Jacobs ranked 31st in that last season. And again, we know he has the ability to make guys miss, but I think stronger play from the offensive line can obviously help him get to that second level more often, where, of course, there's a greater opportunity for him to break those large runs. Because of Josh Jacobs' total yards last season, which was a little over 1,300 yards on the ground, roughly 75% of them came after contact. And for some context, if we look at Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley, they were in the 50-55% range when it came to yards after contact. So what could Josh Jacobs do when 55% of his yards are coming after contact? What's the opportunity that's there for the run game for Jacobs, for the big play ability, when he has an extra 20% of his yards coming, you know, not after contact? So I think that's where the Aaron Banks signing can really provide a boost. And then Nate Hobbs, the unknowns around Jair Alexander, just his addition, I think, at least provides some stability to the cornerback position. Because right now you can look at, obviously, depth needed, but you can look at the starters and go, okay, you got Javon Bullard in the slot, you got Nate Hobbs on one of the boundary spots, and you got Nixon and Valentine competing for playing time on the other side. Plus, if we assume a draft pick's going to be thrown in there, you can at least see the vision of, all right, here's some stability at that position group.
I want to go back to Banks for a moment because I think you bring up a really interesting point. And I've kind of talked about as well of, you know, Josh Jacobs in the running game were very successful last year, in large part because of Josh Jacobs, like his ability to make people miss in the backfield. And to your point, Imagine if those, you know, one to three people that he's making miss aren't 2 yards in the backfield, mm-hmm. you know, it, and him creating 3 to 4 yards out of what could have been a negative 2 to 3 yard gain on the play based on what was blocked for him. And instead that blocking is there for him, and him making those 2 to 3 people miss are on the second level at linebacker, corner, and safety, rather than defensive linemen and linebackers flying at him in the backfield. And then that's when you start getting, instead of these really impressive 5 to 7 yard runs, mm-hmm. you get even more impressive 20, 25, 40, 50 yard runs. And it can really open up the offense in a whole new way. And I think, Paul, a lot of the reason that people wanted to see a big explosive playmaker at wide receiver is because Green Bay needs more of those big plays in the offense. Well, if you maybe are going to struggle at times to generate some of them in the passing game, if you can generate a few more in the running game, that has the ability to be a huge effect on this offense as well. Maybe it gets that safety coming down in the box. Maybe you get some more advantageous looks down the field, and you can open up some more explosive plays that way as well. So I think this does become a value add with, you know, going from specifically Josh Myers, who I thought was one of the worst run blocking offensive linemen on the team, to Aaron Banks, who I think can be one of the best. I do think that has the ability to be a real value add for Green Bay.
Yeah, and as we look at the trio along the interior, right, Banks, Elton Jenkins, and Sean Ryan, just over the few years, this has really shifted now to you got some people movers along the interior, right? And the Packers have always, you know, had success with their offensive line and in the run game, but there was always a athleticism component, you know, positioning component, getting in space component to it. And now, as last season we saw, they shifted to more runs between the tackles. You got some guys who can take the person across from them and take them from point A to point B. So the addition of Josh Jacobs to this running back room, obviously it changed last season how the Packers operated from a run game perspective. It wasn't just let's lean on the run game more, it's how they ran the ball, right? More between the tackles, more runs from shotgun, because as LaFleur said, those elements suited what Josh Jacobs does best. And of course, you want to put him in a position to be successful.
You have also wrote about some potential changes for this Packers offense moving forward, and that maybe specifically, I think the Aaron Banks signing, but maybe some of these transactions have led you to believe there's even more of a change coming. What is that change, and how could it affect Green Bay moving forward?
Yeah, so as I just mentioned, we saw last year the shift, right, from the run game perspective, leaning on it more and how they ran the ball. And the addition of Aaron Banks, I don't think to the surprise of anyone, says that of course, is going to be a big part of the offense going forward. But from how we've seen free agency unfold currently, with the lack of big signing at the wide receiver position, the Packers are clearly banking on that internal development, the competition at the receiver position, to hopefully create that urgency, raise the level of play of that group, which, of course, is not a foolproof plan, right? That's the hope, but hope's not a plan. So what might plan A be? So I pontificated on this, and I wondered if this year's offense, at least to start, could be a Josh Jacobs, Tucker Kraft 1-2 punch, more heavily featuring Tucker Kraft in the passing game to provide just that reliability, right? But also, we know he has some big playability in him with his yards after the catch opportunities that he creates. So I wonder if that, right now, at least going into the season, might be plan A for the passing game, right? And the receiver development, you're hoping on it. You're obviously going to put them in positions to where they can hopefully take those steps, but that's not going to be what you're leaning on to carry your passing game. Now, as the season unfolds, those receivers make those strides, you make adjustments, you start featuring players more often. All of that can and, you know, will happen, assuming that progress is made. But going into the season, what do we know we have? We know we have a really, really good tight end in Tucker Kraft. So let's get him more opportunities. And this isn't to say that Kraft wasn't, you know, didn't get his opportunities last season. He had 70 targets last year. He was first on the team in receiving touchdowns, but there's the opportunity for more for a player of his caliber. And when it comes to featuring a player, it's not just more targets. It's where does Tucker Kraft line up pre-snap? Maybe getting him some more opportunities from the slot, or heck, even out wide, just to help create some mismatches. It's the parts of the field that he attacks. There was a really, really high percentage. I want to say it was in the 70, 80% range of his targets were within 10 yards of line of scrimmage. Is there an opportunity to get him to attack other parts of the field? And then when is he featured in Jordan Love's progression, right? More of him being the first read, the second read versus the fourth read or the check down option because no one's open or the pressure is getting to you. So those are all different ways that Matt LaFleur can go about getting Tucker Kraft more involved into the passing game component for the Packers. And I think when we look at, again, just a stability component element that this passing game needs, you have a guy on the roster already, not a receiver, but you have a guy on the roster already who has shown that ability in the passing game to give that important stability to you. And of course, he brings some big play upside as well. So why not lean into that as your receivers come along?
I love it. I actually had on my rundown today, ask you, is it time to unleash Tucker Kraft? You've answered that question beautifully already without me even needing to ask it. I'm with you. And I go back to, I forget what Zach Cruz called them last year. I don't know if he called them the freaks or what. It was something, some term that he used, but Josh Jacobs, Tucker Kraft, and Jaden Reed as really being the three sort of catalysts for this offense. All can run after the catch. You can get the ball to them in a variety of different ways. And those are the guys that you want the ball in their hands. And I'm with you. I think they need to lean into those three specifically even more and really make it so that the offense is kind of built out of it. And that's not saying you can't feature Romeo Doubs at times or, you know, cannot utilize some of these other options. I would love to believe that there's still more of an opportunity to get Luke Musgrave a little bit more involved. I'm very excited about Marshawn Lloyd. So I think there's different players that you can, you know, mix and match in. But I still, as I look at this offense and this roster, I still kind of want Kraft, Reed, and Jacobs to be the catalyst for this offense. So I'm right there. I think Tucker Kraft is ready to take another step in this offense. And I think he still fits perfectly within what Matt LaFleur wants to do, where he is a good run blocker and he can go out and do anything that you need him to in the passing game. And that makes it so that there's no sort of tell of like, well, if Musgrave's in, it's maybe less likely to be a block or a running play because he's not as good of a blocker or anything like that. You have that aura of unpredictability when Kraft is in the lineup because he can do a little bit of everything. I think he's a stud, and I think there's still a lot more meat on the bone for what he can become as a playmaker. I don't know if that ceiling is a Kelce or a Gronk or a Mark Andrews or where that ceiling is, but I think it's higher than where he's at now. And I think there's still a lot of playmaking left that he can give to this team.
Yeah. And you mentioned the ceiling. Let's find out, right? Let's give him that opportunity to see where that is. And I love that you mentioned the unpredictability of it. Cause when you have a tight end who just has this well-rounded do-it-all skill set, I mean, that unlocks so much for an offense because defenses can't decipher pre-snap. All right, what's coming, right? Just based on who the tight end is or where he's lined up on the field. And that unpredictability not only creates opportunities for Kraft to exploit, but that creates opportunities for others in the offense as well. That is having that type of tight end, that do it all skill set, can really unlock a lot for an offense.
Totally agreed and could not have said it better myself. You mentioned it at the onset though, no wide receiver, no defensive end. I personally had defensive end and just pass rush. I shouldn't say defensive. I had pass rush as number one on Green Bay's list of offseason needs. I had wide receiver 4. I did have offensive line and corner higher than a wide receiver simply because I still like a lot of the weapons on this team and because I feel like you can find usually wide receivers at the trade deadline or at different parts of the season. So I didn't maybe put quite as high of a priority on it as the others. But we all know that there, in an ideal world, there would have been another piece maybe added to this wide receiver room and certainly as a pass rush threat as well. And we've got none of that. The only player along the wide receiver group that Green Bay attained was Mecole Hardman. And on the defensive front, the only change is that TJ Slayton is gone. There has been no addition, at least as of recording this. So what do you say to Packers fans who really thought that this team was maybe a pass rusher or a wide receiver away and that nothing has been done to address either of those positions?
Yeah. So like I said, at the start, my expectation was that wasn't going to happen in free agency. And where I was coming from with that is when I write, when I come on your show or radio, all that stuff, I do my best to provide the perspective of what has Brian Gutekunst done? What has Matt LaFleur done? What have they said? Right. And try to do my best to provide as much insight as I can around those comments, because that, you know, at times leads us down at least somewhat of a path of what might be coming down the road. And from just a pure roster building standpoint, right or wrong, right, where that part's out of the equation, but how Brian Gutekunst goes about building this team, adding to those positions in free agency just never seemed to be the likely path, or via trade at the receiver position, right? For one, in terms of what the Packers truly need, it's a wide receiver one, right? Like, they got a lot of really talented players, but you need that player who can step up in those moments, be that go-to option. And there's just not a lot of those guys out there. So you're already dealing with a super, super small pool of players to pull from. And when it comes to acquiring via trade, and Brian Gutekunst spoke about this after the season, you're not just sending away a second round pick. You're losing out on that pick, a player who's young, ascending, you know, hopefully, presumably heading towards their prime on an inexpensive rookie deal. And you're taking on a veteran player who can come in and help right away, right? And that's obviously the benefit of this. Sure, but you're taking on a big contract. You're adding a big cap hit. There's probably an extension that's coming. And now those cap dollars, these big cap dollars, now have to be all suddenly just worked into your salary cap management in that 2 to 3 year window that I think GMs typically operate within. And that obviously changes things. Does that impact who you can sign next offseason? Does that impact you re-signing your own free agents? So again, it's just more than, well, it's just a second round pick. There's a lot of trickle down that comes with that. And again, not saying it's right or wrong whether that decision's made or not, but that Brian Gutekunst told us that's a part of the decision-making process. So when it came to the receiver position, the trade, the big signing, it just didn't seem to calculate for me that was going to be a part of it. And I alluded to it already. Competition is going to have to be what takes this group to the next level, right? You hope that Mecole Hardman can add some of that, right? Whether it's for a roster spot, whether it's for snaps, whether it's for targets in a game, you hope that if there's an early round draft pick that comes in, that player can provide that as well. So it raises the urgency, hopefully raises the level of play. Because Brian Gutekunst talked about last offseason, a year ago now, that 2023 team, how the competition, not just at receiver, but throughout the roster, was such an important element to just the growth we saw that Packers team. And so I think if you're Gutekunst, you're trying to bottle that right again at the receiver position this upcoming season and hope that you see that be the catalyst towards growth moving forward. Now, when it comes to the defensive line, the reason that I didn't think that the Packers were going to spend big there in free agency is, one, it's a really deep draft class at the tackle and defensive end positions. And again, when we go back to how Brian Gutekunst builds the roster, signing an expensive veteran or, again, young, ascending, hopefully high impact on a rookie deal. I mean, that's the path he's going to go down just about every time, right? So that in itself told me that defensive line addition wasn't likely. And when we look at the Packers' resource allocation, salary cap-wise, you have big money on the books for Rashawn Gary. You have big money on the books for Kenny Clark. You have a decision to make coming up about Devontae Wyatt. Like, there's already a lot of salary cap dollars invested into that room. And just from a long-term cap stability perspective, you know, you want to find a young, you know, a rookie deal player who can come in and make an impact just to help balance that out to a degree. So again, those are the reasons why I didn't necessarily expect there to be a big addition in either of those positions. And again, not saying that that's what they should have done or anything like that, but from how we know Gutekunst goes about operating, that's how I saw things.
I think you're spot on. And I think people are starting to recognize it more. And there are obviously people that are going to be listening to this that understand it incredibly well, but I don't think people quite recognize in its totality yet how valuable young, talented players are. For example, Zach Tom, if you were just to if everyone was a free agent every year, like what would Zach Tom be getting on the open market right now? I don't know, 30 mil per year, something, 25, 30 mil per year. He's making $3.3 million this year. I mean, just a ridiculous contract for Zach Tom. I mean, Rashid Walker, Dan Moore got like $15 million per year this year. Rashid Walker's making $3.3 million this year. Jaden Reed, $1.9 million this year. Edgerrin Cooper, $1.9 million. Sean Ryan, $1.6 million. Javon Bullard, $1.5 million. Tucker Kraft, who we just talked about, $1.5 million this year. Evan Williams, $1.1 million. It is tough to pay anyone less than what Evan Williams is getting paid. Dontavian Wicks, $1.1 million. Carrington Valentine, $1 million. Carl Brooks, $1.1 million. Like, the insane value of really talented, cheap contracts over a 4 to 5 year period of time, five if you can pick up the fifth year option, which obviously the contract jumps up a little bit then, but those first 4 years, and if you can find somebody that's good right away and you get 3 to 4 really good years out of that super cheap deal, that is liquid gold in the NFL. So when you see teams that are unwilling to give up, you know, second, third, fourth round picks, for players that are maybe established, it's exactly because of that. Because when you trade that second round pick for a DK Metcalf, you are giving up the opportunity at 4 years of a super talented player that's going to make about $5 to $6 million total over the course of those 4 million, over those 4 years, excuse me, for a player in DK Metcalf who's going to make $150 million over a 5 year period of time. And you just traded away that really cheap asset, which again, if you're collecting things in the NFL, if you are a gold collector in the NFL, you cannot have enough awesome players on super cheap contracts. Like I said, it is printing gold if you can get it. And that is why Brian Gutekunst and so many teams are so averse to trading those picks away. And I totally get the philosophy behind that.
Yeah. And I know, obviously, we look at it through the window of, all right, what's happening in 2025? What do they have to do to help this team win? But a year from now, if you look at the Packers cap situation, I think over the cap in terms of available cap space a year from now, and of course, a lot can happen, right? You can restructure, cuts, all that stuff to create room. But right now, I think the Packers, they're in the bottom third for sure. They might even be around in that 25th ranking range in terms of available cap space for next year, because Jordan Love, Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs, Rashawn Gary, Kenny Clark, a lot of these recent big deals, because of how the Packers structure their contracts, the cap hits are really going to take a big jump next year. And now you have factoring that in through the GM's lens and how he's viewing this roster through a 2-3 year window, and adding in another big salary cap hit, whether it's defensive line, receiver, wherever it might be, that very much complicates things. Cause there's a very real world in the future, a year from now, where the Packers are making some difficult roster decisions, right? Whether it's moving on from some players who have been contributors, whether it's going down that path that we saw a few years ago, where it's really restructure heavy, right? Where you're kicking salary cap charges down the road. At least how the cap looks at this time, those difficult decisions could be present a year from now. And when you add another big contract to the books, had they done that in free agency this year, again, it just adds to those challenges that are coming.
Not to mention, obviously, you've got Devontae Wyatt and Quay Walker's fifth-year options coming up, and unrestricted free agents next year. Christian Watson on that list, Malik Willis, Sean Ryan, Zach Tom, Kingsley Enagbare, Rashid Walker, to a lesser extent, Zane Anderson. So they've got some big time unrestricted free agents coming up as well that they're going to have to pay. It all goes into that equation. And it's all things that Brian Gutekunst has to consider as to what, you know, when he's making these moves for these potential players. So yes, everyone I'm sure would have loved to have a DK Metcalf for one of these players, but it definitely has ripple effects as well. And trading away a second round pick plus, which by the way, the Steelers had a better second round pick than Green Bay. So they would have had to even up their offer to beat out Pittsburgh's offer for that. And then give that huge contract would have been, I think, a very tough pill to swallow for Goody. I want to switch gears to cornerback for a second, because despite corner being one of the positions that Green Bay actually did attack in free agency and going and getting Nate Hobbs, they have Nate Hobbs, they have Keyshawn Nixon, they've got Carrington Valentine, Javon Bullard can play in the slot. As of recording this, again, nothing's happened with Jair Alexander as of yet, but the overarching thought is that Jair Alexander is no longer going to be a member of the Green Bay Packers. And then they've lost already Corey Ballantyne. I'm going to do that forever. Corey Ballantyne. They've lost Eric Stokes. They've lost Robert Rochelle. So you've seen some of these corners that have exited, and it still definitely feels like a bit of a need for Green Bay right now.
Yeah, absolutely. At the bare minimum, you have to bolster the competition just for the depth on this roster. Because after Nixon, Valentine, and Hobbs, the other cornerbacks on the roster outside of Jair Alexander, I think it's Isaiah Dunn in 116 defensive snaps over 4 seasons is the most experienced player in that cornerback room after your potential starting combination at the boundary. So competition at a bare minimum has to be added to that room. And we fully expect the Packers to do that. And I think as well, part of that to-do list for Brian Gutekunst is finding some competition for Nixon, Valentine out on the boundary, right? To help those to elevate their level of play. And if you find someone who can step in and play at a higher level, of course, that's going to be a win as well. One thing I wrote about recently, though, is just because something's on the to-do list, right, doesn't mean it's urgent. Right. And I just wonder, with the addition of Hobbs, like I said, it provides stability to that room. You know, if week one had to start tomorrow and you had Hobbs, Nixon, and Bullard. Like you could make that combination certainly work. But I just wonder how urgent of a need it is, because you hear Brian Gutekunst, you hear LaFleur, Jeff Hafley, they all speak very, very highly of Keyshawn Nixon and what he provided them on the boundary last season. And to a degree, we always got to be mindful, right, of the GM speak, the coach speak. But at the NFL Combine, if you listen to how Brian Gutekunst talked about Keyshawn Nixon versus how he talked about what they need from the pass rush, I mean, two very different tones, right, in terms of how what it seems like the internal perception is of each of those position groups. Now, again, not to say that there isn't going to be an early round pick. If I were guessing right now, I absolutely think that there's going to be. Not to say that competition for Nixon or Valentine wouldn't be beneficial. It absolutely would. Because as we look at areas where this cornerback room has to improve, it's completion rate and just ball production. The Packers ranked, I believe, 31st last season in pass deflections. Keyshawn Nixon's completion rate when targeted was around 66%. Valentine was around 80%. And even though those two really did a good job of limiting big plays, Nixon gave up around 9 yards per catch on the year. Valentine wasn't much more than that. Like for a boundary cornerback, those are good numbers. Yep. But if you're giving up 9-10 yards every three out of four targets that come your way, that's still a first down. The offense is still staying on the field. So it's absolutely areas of improvement. There's reasons to bolster the competition for this room. Fully expect the Packers to, but just from what we hear, right? We hear Gutekunst, Hafley, LaFleur talk about Keyshawn Nixon. LaFleur also spoke highly of how Valentine really improved over the course of the second half of the last season as well. I just wonder, compared to the outside world, is the level of urgency at that position, does it match internally? Because at least what we've heard doesn't seem to.
No, I totally agree. And if anyone's hoping that, you know, maybe Nate Hobbs can come in and be that big time deflection player, 13 pass breakups in his entire career over a 4-year period of time. And only three interceptions in his career as well. So he has not been a big time deflection / pass breakup / interception player as well in his career. So not sure if that's something that Green Bay just doesn't value as much, if just sticky coverage is more important than maybe some of the deflections and whatnot, but that is not something that they have in abundance. Maybe that is something that they can find a little bit in the draft as well. Before we talk about that draft, I want to have a couple questions on that before we get you out of here. But you did write about a potential under the radar position that Green Bay could improve upon.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's tight end. And the reason I say that, it goes back to featuring Tucker Kraft more. If you're going to involve Tucker Kraft more in the passing game, you have to find someone who is a capable blocker to step into that role. I mean, Matt LaFleur at the end of last season alluded to, you know, because he was asked, what kind of impact can Kraft have? Does he need to be featured more within the offense? And LaFleur said, yes, we got to do a better job of that. When asked why didn't that happen over the course of last season? Again, there's a lot of factors in play. But part of it is Kraft had a heavy blocking responsibility within that Packers offense. Even if you're chipping, like that limits your routes, right? You can't necessarily get to the second level. You're not going to be an early read in Jordan Love's progression. So to get Tucker Kraft more opportunities in the passing game, you have to have a capable blocking tight end to help as well. The Packers, from what we've heard, they feel that Luke Musgrave can be a capable blocker at the NFL level, but we know from a skill set perspective, that's never going to be his bread and butter, right? Ben Sims, PFF grades, not the be-all end-all by any means, but for some context, he ranked 59th out of 84 tight ends last season in run blocking grade. That's an upgradable position for the Packers, that blocking specific role. And again, we know they want to have that well-rounded presence within the offense. It's not going to, you know, there's going to be someone who can impact the passing game a little bit as well. But I think in order to get Tucker Kraft more passing game opportunities, the depth behind him at the tight end position from a blocking perspective, I think can be improved. And so I could see, again, that's not an early round pick that you're going to spend, maybe not even a mid pick, but you start to get to rounds 5, 6, 7. I think there's the opportunity there for the Packers to add a more, again, traditional, that Y tight end who can handle some of those blocking responsibilities to at least compete with Ben Sims for that role. And whether the rookie would take over that playing time or Sims would take a step forward this year, either way, it's a win-win for the Packers. And I think that then helps you unlock what you can do with Tucker Kraft in the passing game.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that Ben Sims fell to tight end 4 by the end of last season, and they had John Fitzpatrick active and not Ben Sims. So he took a step back. He had a lot of opportunity to go out and show Green Bay when Musgrave was hurt of like, hey, I can still be your, I can be your number 2 tight end, or at minimum show like, hey, I'm a really valuable number 3 tight end. And he didn't. I think one of the more disappointing aspects. I thought Green Bay may have had a player there, and he just did not step up in any real way. And even the thing that, you know, in his rookie season that from time to time he showed, I thought as a blocker, almost looked like he took a little bit of a step back in that regard as well. So I think it's absolutely a position that Green Bay can bring in some competition for, and just purely as just a pure blocking tight end. Like, I kind of view it as Tucker Kraft is your overall tight end, can do everything well, but I wouldn't put him as like a, oh my good, look how unbelievable as a blocker that he is. And even if he was, right, to your point, if you want to open him up as a more pass oriented player, you might need that blocking tight end alongside of him. Musgrave is a effort blocker, but he just doesn't have the great skill set for it. And then Sims and it did not step up. Fitzpatrick, as of recording this, they have not brought back yet. So no, it's a very under the radar niche sort of position, but one that Green Bay absolutely could improve. And I think it could actually have an impact on this offense. So we've seen a player like Mercedes Lewis, how involved he has been in Matt LaFleur's offense because of exactly his run blocking and pass blocking prowess. So it's definitely something that Matt can use, and they don't really have it on the roster right now.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely in play.
All right, last but not least, I just want to touch a little bit on this 2025 NFL draft as it's coming up, as we're recording this a month away from today. I want to start by asking you, what is something that the Packers absolutely must accomplish in this draft, if anything?
I think for me, the big thing is you got to find a way to add a more high impact presence to the pass rush. And for me, I'm looking, I think anywhere D tackle would obviously all be valuable, but I'm looking at the defensive tackle position specifically, just because when you're getting a strong push from the interior, I mean, everybody within the front 7 for sure, and likely in the secondary, is going to benefit from that. The best way to wreck any play quickly is with a quick push up the middle. The space that player occupies, the double teams they might take on, that frees up linebackers, right, to fill gaps, that frees up defensive ends, might create some one-on-one opportunity. So that player might not always be filling the stat sheet, right? But their presence, an interior, strong interior presence when playing at a high level, everybody around them on the defensive side of the ball feels that. And I think there's a ripple effect of elevating all those players around them. So for me, if the Packers can add that type of presence, right? And again, this is a deep class. There's going to be some good, you know, hopefully high impact players on the board in round one, even round two for them when they're picking at that position to help. So for me, that's priority one, because again, it helps everyone around them. So in terms of how do they attack the draft, that's where I would like to see them go right away, right off the bat. And when we look at just the overall needs that they have, defensive line, corner, and wide receiver, I think most will agree are the big three. And there's not a lot after that, right? That rivals, like depth's needed, obviously. We just talked about tight end. You can find places to upgrade. But in terms of needs, like, we need to improve this season if we're going to, you know, compete for championships, as Brian Gutekunst said. Those are the big three. So I would like to see early on just an aggressive approach going and getting those positions to hopefully find some players who can help elevate those units.
And thankfully, defensive tackle and even defensive end seem like pretty solid / deep positions in this draft. So hopefully Goody can go a little bit hunting at those spots and upgrade it in some real legitimate way, and then find maybe a couple of those diamonds in the rough at wide receiver and corner while he's at it. Speaking of which, I know Green Bay currently picks at pick 23. Any early draft crushes, anyone that you're, you know, specifically hoping for at pick 23 that could be there that Green Bay could select?
Yeah, I just gave the reason why. The defensive tackle position, I really like Kenneth Grant. I think that size, that athleticism at that position, and then just for all the reasons mentioned, you get a player of that caliber in the middle, I think everyone around him can be better. So I really, really like just his play style, his fit with what the Packers need, the benefit that the other defenders around him can have. I think from a versatility standpoint, Jahdae Barron from Texas, the cornerback at the cornerback position, he has experience from the slot. He has experience on the boundary. And I wrote about this Monday morning for ESPN The Cross. While we're focused on the cornerback position and what's missing there, not to be overlooked is the Packers have a really, really versatile secondary right now. Yes. You have Hobbs and Nixon who can play inside and out. You have McKinney who can literally do anything on the back end of that defense. You have Javon Bullard, free safety, blitz, slot. there is a lot of versatility in that secondary and not to be overlooked, because as we look at Jeff Hafley's defense and just his ability to adapt, to evolve, to change weekly, right? Based on what do my own players do well? What does the opponent do well that we want to take away? Just putting different looks on tape so the opponents have to study more, not being able to get a beat pre-snap of what's coming just based on where everyone's aligned. Because once the ball snapped, they could be in completely different positions. Like, that can help with some of this, you know, heavy lifting, so to speak, as we look for, all right, how do we get more out of this cornerback position? So that versatility component, I just don't want that to be overlooked when we're talking about cornerback or the secondary as a whole, because that's a really, really advantageous element that the Packers have.
Well, we even saw Green Bay do some inverted cover two looks with where they've got their corners going back to safety. Well, we've heard Nate Hobbs say, well, I can play safety. Well, they don't need him at safety, but in some of those unique looks, he can screen back at safety, especially if he's playing in the slot, and do some really unique things that way. We know Keyshawn Nixon has unbelievable versatility. Javon Bullard could be in the slot and then go back to a safety. Mm-hmm. And we've seen those safeties come screaming up and play corner in certain situations as well. Jeff Hafley's a madman in the more ridiculous, versatile pieces that you can give him. He's going to show you a completely different Rubik's Cube on every single play, and it's never going to look the same, and you're not going to know exactly what's happening, which is exactly where you want to be as a defense and exactly where you don't want to be as an opposing offense. So, no, the versatility, you can never have enough of those pieces, and if you can find another corner that even brings more of that, I would certainly be all for it for Green Bay as well. Paul, phenomenal stuff as always. Anything we missed today or anything that you want to plug on your way out?
No, we hit on all the big stuff, but I appreciate it. Follow me on Twitter at Paul_Bredel. Find all my work over at ESPNLacrosse.com and YouTube, The Paul Bredel Show. We upgraded our name, The Paul Bredel Show versus just Paul Bredel. So hit like, hit subscribe. I really appreciate it.
A small tweak, but an important one. It is now The Paul Bredel Show.
I was thinking too.
go and make sure and follow.
Real differentiator.
Yes, exactly. He does phenomenal work, whether it's at ESPN Lacrosse or over on his YouTube channel. This is just a snippet of what you get from Paul basically every single day with how he covers the team. So again, make sure to follow him on social media at Paul_Bredel. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Paul and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.